I'm not going to settle for anything less than a championship caliber team.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Bold Take. It's been about a month and a half, about the length of one Jaguars coaching search since we spoke to you. But we're back. We're here.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's cool.
Haagen-Dazs, not any of that other bullshit.
This is good. I'm in.
Tell us what you got there, Cap.
This is a little flavor called Parent Trap. It's very good. It's from, let me get the label around here. Mayday.
Hey.
It's not Haagen-Dazs. Dilla is, what do you got there, Dillical?
I got some strawberry cheesecake favorite day. If I wasn't repping the Target brand, I wouldn't be doing it right.
So. Company shill.
What can I say?
They just posted 22% year-over-year revenue.
It's true.
And you know that Dilla is a company man, not just because of the ice cream, but because he's got his store number right there. In his Zoom handle, folks.
I forgot about that.
So
I got my Haagen-Dazs from Target too, just for the record.
I just want to go on record myself and say we wouldn't be sharing this moment with one another, making Bold Take history, first time ever eating ice cream live, if they would have hired Byron Leftwich like everybody seemed to want him to. So
I mean, who's to say? I would have had some ice cream to celebrate Byron Leftwich hire.
Shout out to Doug P. That's good. All right, what do you guys want to talk about?
I don't know. Jaguars do anything?
You tell us.
A long time. The Jaguars did some stuff. Unfortunately, the Jaguars fumbled the bag, as the cool kids would say. We didn't end up with our one Byron Leftwich that it really did look like we were really going to hire. And I think at the end of the day, I think going into it, my top three was Jim Caldwell, number one. And then I had like a 2A, 2B with Byron Leftwich and Doug Peterson. I think from the way the search went down and all the optics of the search, the Jaguars look like dumbasses, like normal. I'm sure we'll touch on that more, but I'm pretty thrilled. I think it's really exciting that we have a quarterback who's had a history of developing, we have a head coach who has a history of developing quarterbacks, a head coach who's played the quarterback position for a number of different, offenses, but more importantly, a number of different like Hall of Fame level quarterbacks, Brett Favre, Marino. I think there was one more, the old head on the pod, Cap, probably be able to straighten me out. But after that, I mean,
I'm McNabb, right?
Was it McNabb?
I think so.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And I know he might have been coaching McNabb too, with Andy Reid. It was one of the two.
Maybe both.
His like collective of who he's like played with / coached is pretty impressive. I think it's really cool that we hired a coach that the quarterback was two thumbs up for, which is a big thing going forward. Mm. I know
that's number one.
Yeah, I know for a fact that Trev and his people really, they were hoping for an offensive coach, certain ones over others, but they really were pretty thrilled and are pretty thrilled with where they're at. And I think we could kind of see that from Trevor. Like, obviously, some of this stuff was a shtick, like haha, jokey joke, ice cream, but he seemed like he, genuinely wanted to be there. And in some of those interactions that they caught on the .com website with videos, that's genuine. He was genuinely happy to sit there and talk to him. And I thought it was pretty cool that Adam Schefter and then Trevor Lawrence had confirmed that him and Peterson had been talking before we even learned that he had, been hired as the head coach. So you got to be happy with that. For a lot of people who wanted to know during the whole search, like, is Trevor's team involved? Well, what are we doing something that Trevor Lawrence wants? Are we keeping the boy king happy? Seems like they did. It took a long time. They looked like idiots along the way. But at the end of the day, I think he's in a good spot with where the Jaguars are at right now. And that at the end of the day really does all that matters.
Yeah, ultimately, I think the process was bad. No one other than our boy, Tony Boselli, would necessarily claim it to be otherwise, I don't think. And I think it's important to be able to separate the process and how they got there from
the result,
the final result. Yeah. And because ultimately going forward, if it's the right hire and if Trevor is who we think that he is, then we may have the right people in place to be able to overcome any of the flaws that are involved in that process or any of the processes that we've been through, you know, as an organization in the past decade. So I think that's important. You touched very briefly on the ice cream and said, yeah, you know, kind of hokey or whatever, as far as Trevor sending it in. I think that is master level maneuvering. That's the kind of shit that the dudes who make lasting impressions in any line of work come up with a creative idea like that. So shout out to, if that was his representative's idea, doesn't really matter. That was a great idea that they came up with. If it was his idea himself, then that's even more impressive, right? 22, 23 year old dude who has that presence of mind and that kind of level of thought that goes into things. That's pretty rad. I sat there and just, I wasn't surprised when I was watching the video from the press conference to hear them say that, but I was genuinely like, damn, that's good. Like, to that quickly just be like, oh yeah, we're making it happen. We're sending ice cream, like boom, boom, boom. I was like, that's smart. That's smart.
I'm gonna just go ahead and chalk it up as a dub for Trevor, because as I've shared with you guys and I pointed to on the timeline, it's pretty easy to tell if it's Trevor tweeting or if it's team tweeting. And it was Twitter for iPhone that tweeted out the video of the ice cream Doug Peterson thing, which means it was Trevor who tweeted it. So I'm just chalking it up as that's a Trevor dub.
Nice. So you keep dropping nuggets here, and I feel like it's my job to go back and slightly clean them up. So what you're getting at that you shared with us is basically almost every time that you see underneath Trevor's tweets, Twitter for iPhone, it's coming from Trev. If it's anything else, it's
Twitter web app.
Twitter web app, it's coming from his representatives. So there you go. If you ever want to know, and now I'm sure they'll completely change it up now that we figure that out. But sure. That's a little bit of how we've been able to figure it out through the process. We've lost Solly already. He's somewhere with his ice cream and he's just happy. So we'll continue the
he's just thing. The Jaguars during the coaching search, invisible.
I was gonna say, if that ice cream idea was all a Jags like PR decision, then it's cheesy.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the kind of nuance that's involved in anything like that, right? Like if it's completely staged, then yeah, it's hella cheesy. If it was something that was just a really cool, fun thought that came genuinely, then it is what it is, right? Yeah. So. All right, there's so much to kind of get into with the process here and how we got there, let alone what our impressions are of one Doug P, aka Doug Peterson. Dilla, let's just start. I think maybe a good place to start is for you to be able to sort of break down for people what happened with Byron and your infamous tweet. The infamous Dilla L that so many, you had a third L in your name for many people on the timeline as they wanted to remind you and me and anybody else who is associated with you. So maybe, is that a good place to start? Just kind of walk people through like how you got
how it started and where it went.
Start from the very beginning though. Go through the whole process.
Like when I'm going to start on Tuesday. 'Cause
that's like in the middle, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to start on Tuesday, which is really when it, no, Monday, which is really when it started. So I was the first person to tweet that the Jaguars were going to Tampa and they were going to be interviewing Byron Leftwich, right? A couple hours later, Aaron Wilson, who I don't know who he's working for anymore, but he's worked in Baltimore and Houston. He's an NFL guy. He was the first person to confirm that that's what was happening. And then it was kind of quiet, I think, until the next day when, I guess around noon, I heard that the Jaguars were interviewing Byron Leftwich. Like, the interview had started around noon, lunchtime. It had gotten later into the night. I think it was about, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. I started hearing Leftwich is like starting to bring up the idea of Adrian Wilson joining him in Jacksonville. At this point, I had no idea what, you know, the process was, where Adrian Wilson was slotted in, if he was coming, where Trent Baalke was. Because one thing I never had during the whole search was information on if Trent Baalke was staying or going. Nowhere ever did I say anything, because there was nothing, you know what I mean? There was no real information on that. So back to Byron. I got a text at like 9:45, which was the first one, and it said, it sounds like the deal is really close to being done. And then within the next couple minutes, four or five more texts are DMs, like saying the same thing. And sometimes, like, when I get a message from someone and someone else, I know that there's a possibility that they talked. So I'm not going to count it as like two different confirmations. And, 'cause sometimes I'll just go straight up, like, how many people have you told? I don't need to know who you told, but like, have you been spreading this around? 'Cause shit gets back to everybody. It's kind of funny. No matter who you talk to, everybody talks to everyone. But pretty quickly, four or five people who I know aren't connected at all are all saying the same thing. Like, the deal is done. But I learned something that I had never like experienced before.
Was it that Gene Fournette is your daddy?
What's that?
Was it that Gene Fournette is your daddy?
Yeah, right. Gene Fournette was wrong literally as quick as he could be, right after me. But anyway, I left off the end of my tweet, barring unforeseen circumstances. And if I go back,
which is a Schefter staple.
Yep. If I go back and I show you at what time I tweeted the tweet, which is like right at 10 p.m., I think on Tuesday night, the DMs, the last couple DMs are where it was like the barring part. And the dude like was like, yeah, you should say it like this. And I chose not to. And it came back and bit me in the ass. But it really was that close. It was an 11th hour push from Byron trying to get a GM. He didn't want to work with Trent Baalke. I genuinely believe that Byron thought he was going to be picked over Baalke at the end of the day, which is why he told New Orleans Saints no. And then if you like believe what you heard, like, you know, heard around the league, other teams that were looking for coaches weren't even really interested in Byron because they knew he had a sight set on Jacksonville. The only team that I heard like rumblings of maybe being interested was Miami. And it was kind of like expected that Byron wanted to stay in Florida. So Miami thought that they might be able to jump in. But even they never ended up, you know, interviewing. They didn't hire a coach until after Byron had pulled his name out of the Jaguars hat and he still didn't get involved down there. So maybe that wasn't legit, but yeah, I had my first big miss, but also it just comes the fact that shit changed. It was really that close to being done, but I don't know. I think it's tight. It's kind of humbling for me to take a L too, and like a big L. I think something that's funny. No, like I think something that's legitimately funny is because Byron came from, or would have been coming from Tampa, a lot of the dudes with check marks in Tampa follow me because we're so close in you know, location. We've all hung out with each other in real life before. So it kind of like sparked it off really quick. And I'm curious because there were a whole lot of other people who were saying that it was a done deal too. It wasn't just me. Lots of big media. And I'm curious how much of my tweet had to influence with that. Because from the minute I tweeted that, for a whole week, NFL reporting was fucked. everyone was wrong. Everyone was guessing. It was crazy. So it was just kind of like, makes me wonder how much of it was people running with stuff. And then too, how many people did we see get called out for being a mouthpiece for someone else? That shit was like big time. Like we're talking about Mike Florio was laughing at, you know, Schefter and them dudes on Rich Eisen, like big time, like dudes just shitting on each other. So I don't know. It was a really crazy week for NFL reporting.
And I think it was that's one of the most interesting elements of it, of your whole, like 9 hours of infamy, where you broke a gigantic piece of news and then all of a sudden everybody wanted to say you were wrong. The really intriguing part of that, and so let me take a step back first. What I'm about to say is probably the piece of it that the folks who have wanted to jump in your mentions and my mentions over the last week or two and talk a bunch of shit and talk about how you're wrong and you know, we don't know what we were talking about as far as what we were saying that was going on within the process. They're missing the nuance that you were just kind of referencing, right? Like I want to make sure we touch on this on the pod. If you weren't living and breathing and following this stuff on the timeline in real time, I could see how going back and looking at him, you're like, oh, this guy just spouted off and said, but when you look at the chain of events that you kind of set in motion, and then you look at how they got to where they eventually got, yeah, it's hella, hella interesting on how it all played out. Right. Like you just said, and it's also very hard in my head to even believe for a second that they weren't close with Byron. Like, I think they want people to believe that now, right? In hindsight, yeah. And Byron's probably not going to come out and rock the boat and leak any information otherwise, at least not right away.
Yeah.
There's no way that the process played out how it did over the last 10 days to a week if they weren't close. And I think when you start putting all those puzzle pieces together,
yeah,
on the different things that happen, that's what comes out of it.
And I think too, I started my timeline on that like Tuesday of the Jaguars being announced that they were going to go down there and interview him. If we go back to January 10th, I told everybody that if Byron Leftwich, you know, got a head coaching job and got a say on his GM, it was going to be Adrian Wilson. That tweet was so right. He played chicken with the Jaguars for a week about getting his guy. You know what I mean? And that's kind of like what you were saying, Cap, like the timeline of events. And even now, like with this Mike Caldwell guy that we're going to hire, I think his name is, he was in the building today all day. How do people not know? How has no one in town said that?
Well, because 90% of the people or more that cover the team, when they're breaking something, it's because somebody in the stadium
literally told them,
hey, you can break this.
Yeah.
Right. Hey, here's some information. Go ahead and go out with it. And that's the majority of people who come forth with stuff. So, you know, and I think that's another element of this that we don't have to spend a ton of time on, because I'm not trying to give you a bigger head than what you already have right now with that giant beard, but
it's gigantic.
It is. It's a very large head. We know that. With that said, I find all of this so intriguing because you literally don't care about most of the notoriety or, you know, getting a check mark or keeping score or anything like that. You really don't. And I know that about you because we're buds and we've talked about it over the year, you know, over the last couple of years at pretty great length. But the dynamic, seeing the whole dynamic of things change because this random guy on Twitter was pretty cool and started making connections with other people, which led to, well, this guy knows a lot of stuff. I'll contact him too and tell him some stuff. And then that led to another person and another person. And how that dynamic now of how this team is covered, it's changed.
And all that led him to Tony Khan being his source.
That's crazy. I still can't get over the fact that Tony Khan is his source. You know, or at least the main source anyway. But it is. And this was just kind of the culmination of that fact that the way that you disseminate information to the fan base and to, you know, primarily to the people who are on Twitter, that has changed the dynamic of how everyone covers this team now. And I'm not saying that to like pump you up or to, yeah, for sure. to, you know, to the people who are listening to this to make you sound like, you know, you're more important than what you are. It's just, it's the reality, right? And even to the point to where the random guy on Twitter who everybody thought was a black dude up until like a year ago has everybody on 1010XL commenting on the things that you're tweeting. And it's a really, really interesting dynamic because it's not like you have a journalism degree. And it's not like you even want to pretend to be a journalist.
Not at all.
you just want to be like a man of the people who's sharing some scoops. Like, that's it. And I don't know. I don't know if enjoy is the word. Like, when it comes to watching it play out, like if I enjoy watching the local media people squirm a little bit or be a little bit uncomfortable with you. But I don't know if it's enjoy or... What'd you say, Sally?
I do. I think it definitely is enjoy. It's very enjoyable.
I just think, too, it's important that people remember that, like, I'm just telling you guys shit I'm hearing. Because even when I am, like, first, I mean, I was first on the Joe Schobert trade by, like, an hour. Then they don't talk about me. It's fine. I'm just here to, like, let you guys know what's going on. And not you guys by these two dudes sitting right here. Like I text them shit like days before I tell y'all on Twitter.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I just think people miss that point. They're like, I'm just letting y'all know what I'm hearing when I'm allowed to let y'all know what I'm hearing.
You know what I think is funny is that they chose not to put any information out themselves at all. And they essentially almost allowed you to control the narrative for the entire time because you were the one willing to say something up front. And, you know, maybe other media people are hearing the same things, but they're not comfortable enough to run with it because of their reputations or their, you know, their big J journalism degrees, but having the information out in the open early.
You're dead right. And it wasn't just how he made the Jaguars react or the lack of their reaction. By them not being forthright with anything that was going on in the process, they created a vacuum that was going to be filled by someone. And the moment that Dilla said, you know what, I'm going to cut through the bullshit. I have no agenda here to this agent or this agent or to this organization or this GM. He's just like, I'm going to tell y'all what I heard, which is what he's pretty much always done. But the moment that he did that, then had repercussions for everyone because then you saw the Rappaports of the world, like all of a sudden coming out with very pointed remarks on, you know, that were pretty distinguishable about where they were coming from. Right. And so, yeah, it was.
And then other people calling those people out for doing so.
That's what I was going to say. The moment that I called out Rappaport for having the same agents as Bill O'Brien, and then Rappaport getting laughed at on NFL Network by Garofalo. That was all I needed to know.
That's Mike's.
Mike's. Yeah. Mike, yeah. Use take two. Maybe, Bill O'Brien, Jaguars?
Maybe it was for Ian.
The moment he laughed at him for his Bill O'Brien report, that was it. I knew I was right. Like that was like,
and that's – I tweeted this, and I'll go ahead and just put it on record on the podcast too. That's the kind of shit that frustrates me.
Right.
Because you're not asking to be held to the same esteem You're not getting paid, right? Like, you're not doing this for a living. Like the rap sheet, you know, rap sheet is, Ian Rappaport is, I'm sure, compensated very well for what he does.
Schefter signed like a couple $1 million deals, so yeah. I'm sure it's comparable.
Yeah, he's up there. If he's not in the seven figures, he's in the high six figures, right, annually. And so when the Dingleberries on 1010XL want to sort of attack you, or your credibility, or even your motivation or who you are, and like, and they want to belittle that, that's the part that I kind of take it, not kind of, that's the part that I do take issue with, because they have no problem referencing people like Rap Sheet and Schefter and, you know, even to a degree, people like Jason LaCanfora, who I know has been more right than normal with Jaguar stuff over the last year or two. But yeah. I mean, just there's plenty of people that do this shit for a living who are as wrong as you were every day on that one tweet, right? Yeah. And so I just think it's disingenuous to look to those people as some great arbiters or great purveyors of information when they're wrong more than they're right, usually. And half the time, I think what you learned is that lesson of what they actually do. They put a disclaimer on everything.
Yeah.
Just about everything they're reporting.
The words are so carefully chosen.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this notion of being right and not being first is great, but then some of the highest paid people in every line of journalism are still the people who are the newsbreakers. So you lose me in that whole argument and that whole theory of, oh, you know, it's just the new age rush to be right. Well, hey, that's your industry, pal, you know, and Dilla's not really even trying to play in that industry. That's not his profession. It's not what he's doing. He quite literally is a bro on Twitter who's just trying to keep people informed and, you know, is putting some shit out there because he would want other people to hear it. So anyway, that's my stance on the stuff. And I think it's hilarious that as many people are as uncomfortable about it. And I hope you are wrong several more times where you break things and it makes people uncomfortable, because it's pretty funny to watch. Because ultimately, as long as you're not like outing the people who tell you this stuff, what is the recourse or repercussions that you
there
have?
There is none.
Yeah. I mean, oh no. Or, you know, are people not going to hang out with you?
Right. Like, so I'm saying, like, the same person who told me that the Byron deal was done is the person who told me that Joe Cullen was signing with the Chiefs as a D-line coach. There's no reason not to believe them. They're the same person who told me Joe Schobert got traded. Same person who told me Ronnie Harrison got traded. Why wouldn't I believe them?
This episode of The Bold Take is also brought to you by the very wavy, as Cap is demonstrating right now, the very wavy, the very creative new era marketing. That's not the hat company. It's the marketing company, NUERA marketing. Check out their website. Their website is like a perfect advertisement for themselves, because their website is incredible. And what they do partially is build websites. So hit up their website. It's neweramarketing.com. It has this really crazy homepage landing page right now, where you can like spin around. Dillard, if you went to it right now, your mind would be blown. It's like colors and rainbows and stuff kind of. But they have a page on there that kind of goes into what they do, creative, social, digital, web. But you can tell by this stuff, they do fancy websites, man. Some of their clients, Pratt Guys, City of Jacksonville, you know, Modern Climate Control. And they're also a local company, which is really cool. You know, that's something that we always try to support. So we appreciate them. But I'm pretty sure every creative and marketing professional in town uses them. Have you guys heard any other ones?
Like every single one? That would be impressive.
That's what I'm seeing.
I do know that, like, every, if you have a company out there, which many of you listening do, and everybody needs help in today's day and age with getting your brand recognized, being able to cut through the noise and you know, find your customers, right? And that's what New Era Marketing really specializes in, the brand development. And then I don't think any company is too small, right? Like if you have needs on that marketing end, reach out to them. They'll sit down with you. That's the beauty of having a local company that's a smaller shop, that can give you that one-on-one attention. And that's what they're really about over there. It's a bunch of good dudes and gals. And they're hardcore Jaguar fans as well. So big supporters of ours. We're big supporters of theirs. If we ever join the current century, maybe we'll have our own website for the podcast. And I know one thing, the only people I'm calling is them, because me, Dilla, and Solly, we can't make any damn web pages.
Facts. Again, New Era Marketing. It's N-U-E-R-A marketing.com. Again, website speaks for itself. Visit it, hit it.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know, we're kind of jumping around. We're kind of a little bit all over the place with this, but as far as, to me, the ultimate verification was the press conference.
let's jump into the press conference. Let's keep this going.
Yeah. The only, I mean, I kept waiting because I was busy during the press conference. Jackson had sports all day Saturday. And so I went back and listened to it and watched it afterwards. So I didn't get the effect on Twitter. I wish I would have. I wish I could have been on the timeline while people were watching it live. But I just kept waiting for them to have a better answer for some of those questions, and it never came. And that's not what solidifies it for you, then I can't help you.
It was all fun and games until you watched that press conference, and then you're like,
okay. I mean, literally the first question, Gene Fournette asked the like hardest, most hot-hitting question he's ever asked in his life.
And he demanded an answer
because he was trying to discredit me. And get Shad Khan to say no. And Shad Khan gave the biggest no answer ever, like non-answer.
Gene Fournette, sports columnist from the Florida Times Union, for Shad. At any point during this process, did you offer the job to any other candidate? And for whatever reason, that did not work out?
We had a process, Gene. And we ran the process, and we had great candidates. Doug is our guy.
Okay. As a follow-up, so does that mean that an offer was extended to somebody or not?
No. I think we never got to the point of having them talk to our players at that point. Okay.
And then he asked him to clarify. And he answered yes, but then answered with a completely different context. That didn't relate to the question.
Yeah.
Which right away we knew from the very first question that Shad was going to lie to us for the rest of the day. But the problem was this time we knew all the answers.
Yeah. And that's the power, of having somebody like you. And again, man, this is sounding like a fucking Dilla love fest here. I mean, people are going to be like, God, Cap really loves Dilla. But that is the power of having someone like you who can disseminate some of the truth in some of the things that you're hearing, right? Because we all know that most NFL organizations, most pro sports organizations are hella dysfunctional. They are nowhere near as buttoned up as they want to project on a league level and even on a local level. They're not. They're shit shows. There's a ton of power-hungry people, you know, fighting to the death every time they walk into that building.
There's like two or three teams in the NFL maybe that win consistently on purpose. The rest of them is just fucking happy accidents.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a fairly accurate statement, right? So knowing that, they're like, I know that because I've known plenty of people who have worked there and I've just been around it for over the last decade. And spent a little bit of time in sports myself to kind of see that. And then also interact with more people who are like sports lifers working in pro sports and to hear the things they say. But to the average person who's just a fan, they're easily swayed by something that, why, Shah Khan's a billionaire. He's the smartest guy in the room. He's the richest guy in the room. Why would I not believe him? I mean, that's human nature. That's the nature of a fan. So having someone like you, whether it's you or if it were someone else, right, that's fairly credible in the information they're providing, that's powerful in the sense that it really sheds light on how dysfunctional this shit really is. And it doesn't give them the easy button to just walk into a press conference like that and lie through their teeth. Because had you never tweeted that, and had it not set out that you know, had no one ever tweeted that it was really the truth, right? That it was about to happen, mm-hmm. that they basically had agreed or offered him the job, however you want to term it. Had you not brought that to light, who would have even been questioning him on that?
No one.
Who would have put him in that awkward situation? No one. No one. He would have been able to parade out in front of that damn press conference and peacock around like he did when he hired Urban Meyer, like he just accomplished something, had his second winning season ever as owner. He would have been able to do that had that information not come out. Information is power. And that reset some of the balance of power in the entire situation. So to me, that's the greatest dynamic of all of it that's worth highlighting. And I saw it in his eyes, dude, when Gene asked him that question. And then when he followed up again and again, in his head, he had to be thinking, if I answer this any more directly than I am right now, I am really setting myself up for Byron Leftwich's people to be able to come out and refute that. I'm setting myself up to look like even more of a liar than I am right now, right? So it's almost like that legal thing, like as a lawyer, right? Like you're skirting around it, you're like not really saying it, but you're... And that's exactly what he did. But dude, I'm telling you, I saw it on his face. It was written. It wasn't just the words he was saying. It was written on his face that he had to be very careful about what he said. And why would he have to be careful, guys? If it wasn't true, why would he have to be careful?
No, true. Yeah. True.
Yeah. And if everybody in the room didn't know it.
Similar in the questions, like, I think they were towards Shad about, like, finding people to work with Balky. Like, that shit was funny. Like, yeah. They would have never asked that in the past.
No. Yeah. No, and his... There were so many things that were telling with that, right? So the questions that were directed about Balky, and then the questions to Balky, to me, they told me as well. Right. So what's the narrative that was spun throughout this process about Shad and about Trent? It was A, that he didn't want to get rid of him. B, that he was asking people if they could work with him. C, that he told people that he didn't really want to go through the GM hiring process again. Right. All of those things were what came out in the process. They came out in the wash. What also came out was that it didn't seem like at any time, even though the pressure was on from the fan base, from national NFL media, I've never seen anything like the Trent Baalke situation where everyone in the national media was unified and this guy, he ain't it, right? He's not the quality human being. You didn't see anyone out there caping for him at all, other than Rap Sheet a little bit indirectly maybe. But that is so unique in this league to have spent as much time as someone has and no one's coming forth, player, man, woman, janitor at a facility, former coworker, former coach, no one's coming forward with really anything great to say about him. So those are the four things that we know that came out in the process.
Even Urban had defenders, man.
Even Urban had defenders. Thank you. By the way, Urban, not a big, we had a guest on this podcast tell us off the record, Urban, not a big Trent Baalke fan, right? Some of the shit that we heard. But those are the four things, essentially, the four themes that came out in this month-long process, or even before. What told me that Shad was never even close, and I think that speaks a lot to how and why the Byron situation shook out. What told me why Shad was never even close to getting rid of Trent was the question to him. I think it was Martino maybe who asked him, how do you feel? How has this process been for you? I'm sure it hasn't been a comfortable one. How are you feeling now that this is all done? And he deadpan looked right at him and said, I feel great. I don't know what you're talking about. Right? Like, that wasn't a dude who was uncomfortable in the process.
Yeah.
That was a dude who knew all along, I got this guy.
This guy doesn't want to do a GM search.
Yeah. I got him and I'm going nowhere. The way that he reacted to that question told you everything you need to know.
That and Mia's question, what did you learn the past year being the GM? And then he basically just said, our owner wants to win. Our owner will do anything to win. Our owner is the God and the Sultan of the universe.
What did you learn in your 1 year working here with Urban Meyer, the 1 year you've been here as the general manager?
We have an owner that really wants to win, and he's willing to do it, whatever it takes to do that. He's been nothing but supportive to me, and through obviously some trying times. So I know this, he wants to win. He's all about the community, and I think his efforts show that time and time again. And that's what we're here to do, build a winner.
Did he not sound like a dude who was just like that brown noser at a work meeting? Like, you're like, this is the guy who tells the boss they're the greatest boss ever, oh, you know, God, like the guy who never forgets boss's day. Who like that, that's what he sounded like, the biggest brown noser. Yeah, I don't know. So those were a couple of the things in there it was a hell of memorable and interesting moment, because it's not very often that we as fans kind of have a little bit of that power. And I wouldn't say it was justifying, but I sat there at the, even when the process finished and it settled on a result that most of us were happy with, other than, Baalke still being here. Most of us are happy with Trent, with Doug Peterson. But I sat there and I was like, man, I feel so justified in the clown thing and that last tailgate and the last home game and the avatars, that, Solly's whole movement.
I think that D-Rock came and talked to us at that tailgate, and I told him something about like, this many people can't be wrong. That many people can't be wrong, man.
Well, and again, this wasn't just about Trent Baalke. That's what I've tried to reset to some people online over the last couple of weeks. He's a symptom. Right. He's a symptom of the greater issue.
Definitely.
And he's just one of the symptoms over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
We're out here like we're out here like a prescription medicine commercial, right? where they list out all the symptoms and the side effects. Like, it's a laundry list of them fuckers. And so he's just the latest symptom. And yeah, I feel a hella justified in all of the criticism that I've leveled toward Shad over the last few years. I've been standing on that table, on top of that table, talking about it. And so to see how this process, which again, man, this was the most important offseason. We said that last offseason. You remember, we sat right here on this damn podcast last offseason and said, this is the most important offseason in franchise history. And then we watched them fumble it all offseason, into the preseason, into the regular season. And you don't get in this league, you don't get many opportunities to right a wrong so quickly and to have another offseason that you can actually win and achieve something and get set on the right path. That was the gift Urban Meyer left with. Seriously, is that he fucked up enough
quickly enough.
Yeah. To where Shad, who again is like, if he hadn't fucked up as much, Shad would have gave him another year.
100%. Yeah. If Urban Meyer didn't get all that PR shit came out, he's definitely here for another year.
So take that, take the way he took Caldwell, and Caldwell was the guy, and then all of a sudden he's not the guy anymore, but then he's kind of the guy, but he reports to Shad, and you know, and moved him around. And then Doug Marone was the interim, but all of a sudden he's the head coach. And then when Caldwell left, now Trent Baalke's in there. And oh, here comes Urban Meyer. And Trent Baalke's still here. But you know, he's not going to be the guy. Urban's the guy. And then all of a sudden, Urban's gone. Trent Baalke's still here. Like, I'm telling you, like, I tweeted this. When people tell you who they are, just listen. They will tell you.
Yeah.
And we're not in year two or three of Shad, where there's still a lot that's left for interpretation.
We got a lot of evidence now.
There's a, like, yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, this is like a open and shut episode of Law and Order over here. this is not, you know, we're not fabricating this stuff. And that's what's so frustrating to me. I still get people weekly that want to tell me that I'm an idiot. And like, you know, Shad's getting it right. Look, he got it right. And it's like, because number one, folks, I don't want the guy to be wrong. Like, I don't benefit off of that.
Right.
Quite literally anything that I do that's associated with this team, whether it's planning away trips, just tailgates, Bold City Brigade, any of the merch that we make, is not made better by this dude fucking fumbling around.
This podcast,
and none of it is made better by this team being as bad as it's been through his tenure.
Yeah.
So
trust me, we want to talk about football. We just haven't been able to really.
No. Well, we haven't wanted to either. I mean, you got to want to talk about what's happening on the field. Dilly, you had some other nuggets, man. What else do we have? Or do we touch on everything from the pod or from the pod?
Tell us more about the search from like a overall of the search itself, not just
the whole search.
Yeah.
Right, let me pull some notes up real quick.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we kind of have a rough idea of, you know, what the order of operations was, but you know, what's the reasons, what's the whys, what's the hows, what's the who's?
Shit's good.
What, you eating ice cream again?
Mayday's elite.
It's kind of melted, so it's even better, you know?
We'll just do a real quick rundown on the whole search. All the names.
Started with Doug, right?
That's what
First interview was with Doug. And from what I understood, the Press Taylor name isn't an impressive name in the NFL circles. And essentially it's what got him, or one of the factors that led to him being fired in Philly. I guess he's been working under Reich in Indianapolis under like head offensive analyst, some bullshit title.
So is he like the Trent Baalke of offensive coaches?
I don't know. So, you know, he's the brother of the Bengals head coach.
Zach Taylor.
Yeah. So pretty much from everything I understand, he's the least talented brother that's got the cool uncle that drags him around everywhere. And that cool uncle is Doug Peterson. So it's kind of an interesting like relationship.
He's got the better name too. I mean, let's be fair here. I mean, Press is better than
maybe he should have been a DB coach. Maybe he should be a basketball coach.
That too, soccer, all of it.
Yeah, pretty much everything but an offensive coach in football.
I don't really remember like all the details. Did they go from him to like Bill O'Brien hype?
So So the assistant coaches was a gripe with their up front.
I got one of those too, except mine came folded. Oh, yours did too. I see it.
Good. I'm still listening.
Sorry.
It's just bad.
What'd you say, Solly? My fault?
So the assistant coaches that Doug was throwing out was an issue up front.
Was an issue up front, and Doug didn't want to work with Trent Baalke.
Okay, so we got one no Baalke, okay?
Yep.
The other candidates, Hackett, Eberflus, Leftwich, who else did they interview? Caldwell?
Early on, but those four that you named, plus Rich Bisaccia, whatever his name is, Rich Balsakia.
Oh, Focaccia.
Yeah, so gotcha. Let's just run with the four major guys. They had a top three, right? Their top three was, in no order, Nate Hackett, Byron Leftwich, and Matt Eberflus, and they ended up hiring Doug Peterson, okay? So from everything I understand, now there is some athletic reporter out there who's reporting that the Jaguars offered Eberflus the job also, which, one, another reason to laugh at Shad Khan if true. Two, from what I understand, it's not true. And three, the reason he was a finalist was to get the double interview because they wanted to get a better look inside of the Indianapolis Colts' organization. Okay. Makes sense. TK move. Smart. Fine. Might as well.
Fine.
Nate Hackett, very legit chance to work for the job. Our very legit candidate was really interested in the job. He was also like Eberflus. They were both – they didn't want to work with Trent Baalke. Which, no, it's not a secret anymore.
It's universal that every candidate didn't want to work with Baalke. We can go ahead and say that, all
right? Right, and they got Peterson in the door because they're going to hire what essentially sounds like bubble wrap for Trent Baalke and an EVP above him and an assistant general manager below him. So, like, literally, they're just going to Eiffel Tower him and make him powerless, I guess, because otherwise, yeah, you feel me? Like, what are you doing? So yeah, those were the coaches in that order. From what I understand, Hackett's offense was also well liked by the Trevor Lawrence camp, and they were cool if they went that direction also. So I was very anti Hackett in the whole search. Like, publicly, I didn't really want him. Very camp counselor vibe to me. But some of the people who are way smarter than me and people that, you know, who have opinions who matter were pro Hackett. From what I heard anyway. So if we just run through it, the Byron deal was locked up. Tony was on board with the Byron deal and was on board with Wilson as the GM.
This is after Hackett is already signed with Denver and Eberflus is already signed with Chicago, though, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. But this covers it all. So Shad killed it and he refused to roll with Wilson as the GM. And they refused to move on from Trent, which obviously seems like it's going to be a thing for a while. They tried to offer Hackett the job, this says, and they made a strong offer. But again, with Trent, no, he wasn't interested at all. And by this time, he had already had his sights set on Denver. They obviously were going to try and do a deal with him. Maybe some people think that it was leverage for Leftwich, because I was after the Leftwich had stalled the day before. Can't get anyone to confirm or deny that. But it says, so Tony Khan's out here. He was trying to line up a bunch of jobs, and his dad kept saying no to their requests. So then they finally ended up on Doug, and he only agreed to do so when there was a buffer between him and Trent, thus the EVP role that they've Shad Khan alluded to them, like asking for approval to add to the league or however he broke that down. So essentially, while we ended up with fourth choice, third choice, Doug Peterson, he's also the one who got Shad Khan to get an EVP in the door. So at the end of the day, that kind of, if you look at him as a candidate, that's a big W, like Solly just said. So that kind of makes me feel better about him and the power that he's going to have moving forward.
And yeah. He's also kind of similar to Byron in a way, in that he was a quarterback. You know, he's an offensive guy. He's a play caller. He has a lot of the same kind of characteristics.
Yeah, and like where Byron got to coach and like watch Tom Brady, Peterson got Favre and Marino.
Yeah.
McNabb, like you said earlier.
Leftwich got to coach with Arians and Tomlin. This Peterson was under Reed.
Yep. And got Holmgren time. So, like, that, the coaching trees are all there for all of them. So, like, if you look at it from a resume standpoint and, like, as a player, you'd almost have to say Peterson was a more successful player, too, even though he was, like, a career backup for most of it. And just longevity in the career, which I think is important. You see a lot of backups become successful coaches because they got to pick so many brains throughout their career, and it kind of gives them a better composite at the end. So I do kind of want to talk about something though with Peterson. Demetrius asked who would be calling plays, and Peterson said that he would like to be calling plays, and from everything we understand, he's going to be calling plays.
Demetrius Harvey with the Big Cat Country. Just Doug, have you decided yet, and I know it's early in the process, but have you decided yet if you're going to be calling plays? And can you just talk about how Trevor Lawrence fits into your offensive philosophy?
You know, that's something that I pride myself in. You know, I will say this right now, that I want to call the plays, and I want to put myself in position to help this football team. And that's my, not only lead the team, but I've done that in my five years in Philadelphia, and I feel really comfortable doing that. And listen, there are times when you get stuck in games and you turn things over. I'm going to be the first one to tell you that you get stuck as a play caller, and you turn it over to some different eyes. And that's just where I'm at. I want to do it. I want to continue to do it and be successful at it.
Are you guys familiar with like what he did in Philly at all?
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially, they ran a better version of Clemson's offense.
Mm-hmm.
That is perfect for what Trevor Lawrence needs. And I think we're going to see not only a group next year that wins more games because they're have a couple more players. Like, we should have a couple more players on the team. They're going to get a big jump in going from being coached by a bunch of schmucks to being coached by people who know what they're doing in the NFL. So we're going to have like a talent bump and a coaching bump. And I'm not saying we're going to be the Bengals, because the Bengals are probably going to lose the Super Bowl where we're going to win it. but yeah, I think it's important to realize that there's good things coming, because this guy who they chose to be the head coach is going to make sure that Trevor Lawrence is what Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be. And the only things that happen to the Jaguars that are good are on accident. So for the Jaguars to be stuck with the fourth guy that they wanted as their head coach is probably a good thing.
Happy accident.
Yeah, I shout out Eric Stoner. That's a stonerism. Yes, I agree with everything that you just said. And it's funny because you kind of just hit on two points that were in my brain. One, when we first started talking about head coaching last episode before that, whatever, and we were kind of talking about wish list, I was very, very adamant that I thought it important to find somebody who had head coaching experience in the league and who had success, because I think that's what our particular situation called for.
That was your number one thing.
It was. And I warmed to Byron through the process for a couple of reasons. One, he's Byron, and I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for him, as a dude with his time here and an admirer of the type of leader that he is. But also, you know, all those attributes of him working with Brady, him working with Arians, who I am a huge fan of, Bruce Arians, his offense, how he coaches, the dude that he is, like everything, you know, all of the above. So those things were check marks that brought me around on Byron. On top of that, I liked the idea, like, you know, Nate Tice was on here talking about Trevor would be a great fit for that kind of system, and how there's only a couple of guys in the league who can really run that system to its fullest capacity. And so that started to intrigue me more and more and more. And lastly, my thing with Byron was you saw how players responded to him. And that's something that I think we needed as an organization as well. So that's why I came around on Byron, because it wasn't just for me. I was like, okay, maybe I'm being a little bit closed-minded here in the sense that maybe Byron, if we're going to go with a first time guy, it's got to be somebody who can nail the culture. And I think he, and I like Doug, and I think Doug will have a good culture, and I think he's a good leader, you know, everything that I can ascertain about it. But I think where Byron maybe has a leg up on...
There's no doubt in your head that Byron would instill that culture.
There is a little bit, because I don't know how he would build the totality of all of it. I know that he would identify with players, because that's not all. That's the not the only part of the culture, right? That's an element of it. And so that gave me a little bit more confidence. I'm still not fully convinced that he would have been an equal candidate to Doug Peterson. We don't know. No one knows. He's never been a head coach.
You don't know what the results are going to be.
Right.
But I will also say, like, the 3 points that you made about Byron, I agree with you. And before he actually was a candidate and was interviewed, you know, those were strong. And I was kind of with you. Like, I like him. I'd be happy with him as a coach. What really set me over the top was when he said, I want my own GM. Your guy's a bum. Everybody in the league knows your guy's a bum. After that came out, we knew that little nugget. I was like, all right, I'm all in on Byron now. Because that's him establishing that culture and knowing that he's going to get the players. Like, he's setting himself up all the way around, and he's not willing to compromise. Yes. It's also him telling a billionaire owner, I know what I'm talking about, and I'm here to win.
I agree with you on the last part. And like, I respect the fact that he's not willing to compromise. And there is a strong correlation between that and being a good leader. Right. At the same time, we don't know whether Adrian Wilson is worth a shit when it comes
to the results from that still right. Could have been bad. 100%. Yeah,
exactly.
Bad.
Exactly. So Dilla's final point there about happy accident. I get those same vibes from this, that if there is going to be success, that was probably the only way that the Jaguars were going to find it. And like, that may be reality. So it was an interesting process for me, because I started out one way, which really would have correlated with Doug Peterson being 1A or 1B on my wish list. And then through the process, I had my eyes open more and more to Byron's validity as a potential candidate. And then by the end, I found myself saying, well, shit, maybe I was right all along in the beginning, right? Like, and I'm cool with it. So I think we can all recognize, though, like, if we take a step back, and I'm saying this collectively between the three of us and to the folks that are out there listening to this, just the fact that we went through a process that was this much of a shit show, and we still had the shot at two of the better candidates that have ever applied for this job
100%
in the 26 years of us being a thing.
That's all because of 16, man.
Oh, 1,000%. Which is why you had to take advantage of that this time, which is why so many people are frustrated by the process, by the way that the process started, by the way that it went, and then even to a degree by the way that it ended, is because there's not another. If they fuck up 16, there's no guarantee that there's another one walking in anytime soon. I guess we take a little bit of solace in the fact that that made it a little less likely that Shad could fuck it up.
He still tried. There was a couple hours there where I changed my avatar to the Arby's logo, and I thought we were getting Rich Pistachio as our head coach.
Dude, hey,
I thought Peterson to the Saints was going to drop at any second that night.
No, I had heard that like Peterson was like finalizing his deal with the Jags or whatever. I told you guys like earlier,
yeah.
And then the Bisaccio's brother fucking followed all the media, and I was like, these motherfuckers. They fucked up another deal because Shad's plane had been in San Diego, and I was like, what the fuck's in shit San Diego? And then come to find out this guy lives in San Diego, and I'm like, you kidding me? Rich Balsack lives in San Diego.
Fucking Rich Basilica.
They're going to hire a special teams coordinator. Bro, I know he like allowed 19 kick returns for a touchdown last year, but that's not the answer. I swear it's not the answer.
Rich Balsamic. You don't bring in fucking Rich Basilica and to deal with Trevor Lawrence. I would have lost there. I mean, you could have fucking hired I don't. Okay, question for you both. Worse, what would be a worse hire? Rich Pistachio or Lovie Smith?
Pistachio. at least Lovie Smith was the Bears coach when they were good. I think if the Jaguars had hired Lovie Smith, I would have fucking killed myself, because Shad Khan paid for him to be like Illinois' coach. So like, it's just a direct connection of like, God, you're extreme so lazy, laziness. Bro. Like, you are so lazy. But I don't know. I
think lazy is kind of a tough word, though. I don't think he's lazy. I think he just doesn't care about this so much as all of this.
No. I'm saying if he had hired Lovie Smith, he was lazy. Oh,
yeah. That's lazy. You know, that's a lazy move. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I mean by it. But yeah. Like, I don't know. I just feel for the Texans, it's probably like not a terrible hire. They keep Pep Hamilton. He's done it before. Their roster sucks ass. They're probably going to like hire McCown. And if you're really looking at what they're doing, they're just, if they hire McCown and he becomes the head coach, this should be looked at as more Flores shit, because it's just really weird to me. And it's the same with Miami getting patted on the back for hiring an African-American. That bro looks like Andy Willis. They hired Dunn to hire, or they fired Dunn to hire Drew.
Shout out Jimbo.
It's just crazy.
What is his racial
he's
background?
He's 50-50. His dad's black and his mom's white. He just looks like Solly's black kid.
So it's like his dad.
Just see, like.
My two kids couldn't look any different. So yeah,
I know it's true.
Well, no, and that's so like.
How they come out?
We're qualified to speak on this on the Bold Take because Solly is in a similar situation. I don't know, dude. Like, I don't. Yeah, that.
I guess it's because genetics he identifies. Wild, if he identifies as biracial, who are we to say?
Yeah.
And I guess he does identify as biracial. So
yeah.
The thing is, like, if you're biracial too, like, when you're growing up, neither race accepts you. So it's like a whole, it's like its own whole little thing. Like, you feel like you don't belong to either. Cass has told me about this, like, when she was growing up. Like, nobody accepts you into their, like, group. You know what I mean?
For sure. No, I get it. It's just,
it's almost like its own little thing, kind of.
I just think it's wild that the team who's being sued for the Flores, like the OG team with the Flores issue, is being patted on the back because they hired a coach of color, but he's not. I mean, I don't know. If he identifies as
a really fucking wacky situation. No, I know. Like, yeah.
But like, it's just wild to see the NFL like pat themselves on the back for. I don't know. As a white dude, I can only say so much. Who am I to say? And who am I to tell people how to feel about it? But
oh, shit, we can say.
It's just wild.
I can say this, though. Everyone in the Houston Texans locker room and organization is going to respect that beard that Lovie Smith has, because that shit is glorious, dude.
That's next level, bro.
I can't wait for mine to go gray. That thing looks fucking sick.
That shit's fire.
Beardy Smith, bro. Like, he just needs to change his
name.
Like, go by the beard. Like, yeah. We're fucked. If they're half as good in his tenure at football as he is at growing like a really classy full gray beard, then we may be fucked. We may really be fucked.
I don't think Doug's got a beard like that up on his face.
No.
We have a very recent customer review for our partner A1 Sliders, where you can get a free estimate at a1sliders.com. Call them 387-538-6835. Our very own Mr. 10,000, the Dillicle.
So I go over to my sister's house today. She's putting her house on the market on Friday, and I notice I don't hear anything. And I realize she got her sliding glass door fixed. So shout out to the guys at A1 Sliders for rolling through and taking care of that.
Boom. Guaranteed she's going to get an extra 10% when she sells her house because she's got a badass sliding glass door.
Facts.
Guaranteed.
Hey, quiet. That's what her sliding glass door sounds like right now.
That was smooth.
Boom.
That
was smooth. Again, the website, a1sliders.com. They do work from New Smyrna to Beach up to Jacksonville, and they will give you a free estimate if your sliding glass door sucks like Dillard's sisters used to.
What's the number?
386-538-6835.
Boom. A1 Sliders. Dilla, what are you hearing for assistant coaches? I know we talked about, what's his name?
Several are official at this point.
Are several? The only one I saw that was official was Mike McCoy. Did more have more gone since we started recording? Maybe.
If you're asking, Sally, because I didn't even.
Yeah, know. I'm asking Sally. I don't.
I'm scrolling. I'm scrolling. I mean, I don't know.
Scrolling. Oh. So Mike McCoy's QB coach.
Mike McCoy is official.
Yeah, Mike McCoy is official.
How do you feel about that?
I don't know shit about a quarterback coach, so I could care less.
Interesting.
He sucked as a head coach, so everyone's going to say he sucked.
I thought I saw another one. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm dreaming.
He was the dude who got a ton of the cred as the OC when Peyton Manning was there, right? And that's how he got the Chargers job, right?
He won with Tebow too.
Yeah, maybe. Did he? I know he sucked as an offensive coordinator in Arizona also.
Yeah, but it was pre that he was because that was a big thing. It was like, wait a minute, well, he got the
Peyton vouch. He got the Peyton vouch, and then he reworked the Tebow stuff. He reworked.
So you're telling me Peyton Manning's voice carries water, but Tom Brady's doesn't. That's fucking crazy.
Interesting.
But no, for coaches, I'm hearing that Mike Caldwell, defensive coordinator, is all but done. Maybe that he was even in the building today. He's the linebacker coach from the Buccaneers.
That's interesting. So yeah, what the type of defense they run? I know he said with Hayes Carline. On the interview that they aired today.
Yeah, that, he wants to stick with the 3-4.
Yeah. And I don't know, I know Caldwell's initial background is I know it's multiple fronts.
It is.
But I don't, to my knowledge, in his background, he doesn't have any strict 3-4 principles or time. So I don't know.
He's just followed Todd Bowles around.
Yeah.
So he's like the Todd Bowles disciple, and he's like elite at making linebackers fucking sick.
That would be cool.
And he's never really worked with Peterson. Like, I think they were teammates maybe at one point for like a year or two. But this guy's maybe the hint at, Peterson saying like, I'm not only going to hire my buddies.
I think he was in Philly when Peterson was an assistant, maybe.
Was it? Gotcha. I knew they were there together.
They would both be like low level assistants at that point.
Yeah. I from everything I understand, that's a really sick hire. I know a lot of people want Vic Fangio to be the defensive coordinator. I haven't heard his name since Saturday. It's kind of weird to me that he didn't get much run at all. I think if Spielman is coming to Jacksonville in any capacity, that's why you're not seeing Zimmer's name anywhere, because those two dudes don't like each other. For a D-line coach, I heard Lane Kiffin's brother, I can't remember his name, Chris Kiffin, I think, who he probably is coming from Tampa. I know he's been in a couple other spots, but obviously if he's Lane's brother, he's Monty Kiffin's son too. So Tampa 2 ties there. I saw that they like was the O-line coach. I don't think has officially been announced, but someone said that whoever the O-line coach is like two thumbs up and 16 times better than George or Hop. So I was like, sick. I don't know. Like when it comes, when it's guys where I can't just like look at their scheme, I don't really have an opinion on it. I don't know any of the technique or anything like that to be like, oh, this guy really makes these guys block with their ass. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know none of that shit.
Well, it's super interesting though. Like you get guys who, the thing I find most, I agree with you a lot because I don't know my ass from my elbow with most of this stuff, right? I mean, admittedly.
I just know I can't shit out of my elbow. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it doesn't smell as bad usually. But the part of analyzing coaching that I find at least.
Did you say analyzing?
Yes, analyzing my elbow. The part that I find interesting is when a new coach comes in and they're assembling a staff. If it's somebody traditionally in the NFL, you have two types of coaching situations. If you hire somebody who's been a coach before, they're usually bringing in a lot of other experienced coaches. That's just kind of how it plays out because they're the people they're comfortable with. If they've been a head coach before, that probably means they've got 1 to 2 decades in the league already. So they've made relationships on a high level with other people who have reached the pinnacle, either as a coordinator or a head coach themselves. You see a lot of retreads is what I'm getting at. The younger guys seem to bring the other younger guys with them, right? Like people who have recently struggled through the ranks coming up with them. And what we see by and large across the league right now, especially, is that those younger guys seem to be the ones who are innovating. And so that's what makes me worry a little bit when I see like a Mike McCoy added to the roster. Because how much is now, there's probably a ton of good that comes with him because of all the knowledge that he has and everything that he's seen. What I don't know about Mike McCoy is how interested is he in the progressiveness of the position and of that side of the ball. I don't know. That's where I can't comment on it, but just from a, you know, a higher level perspective of what we're seeing as trends within the league, that's what I find interesting. So we'll see what, how it all shakes out as he fills out his staff. One thing that I'm pretty confident in is that, whomever he hires probably can't be much worse than what we've had here over the last few years. Knock on wood, please, Lord, please, please. That'll be very interesting. The other element too is, so part of the younger, more progressive minded people, the LaFleurs, the Shanny, the little Shanny, not obviously older Shanny, but the Sean McVays, as they are hiring a lot of other young up and coming coaches to be coordinators or position coaches, those guys are getting poached. So that too tends to affect an organization, right? And a team, especially potentially a young quarterback. So if you've got some guys who are key that you believe are key to your younger players' development, who maybe Mike McCoy is one of those cats who doesn't really have much interest in being a head coach again. He's done it. Right. So that maybe isn't a terrible thing if you fill out. So there's pros and cons, I think, to both ways and both approaches. One of the things that I sort of respected a lot though, which intrigues me about a guy like a Press Taylor, Andy Reid came in and he brought a lot of people with him from his Philly days. But then you look at the tree that has sprouted off of him from Kansas City, and that's hell of impressive. Sorry, Eric Bieniemy, but that's hella impressive in a lot of ways too. When you look at Peterson and Nagy and things of that nature, which those weren't necessarily old retreads, right? Those were other guys that Reed had kind of brought up with him. So I'm interested, what I'm getting at is I'm interested to see if there is that mix, right? Is there, does Peterson fill out his thing with a mix of guys that are kind of old heads and then some other guys that he respects as kind of up and comers?
Is Doug one of those old guys, but who like figures out how to actually use his iPhone well, and not just like duck hunting on his iPhone? You know what I mean?
I like that.
Because it seems like Andy Reid is one of those guys. Is Doug one of those guys? We get to find out.
Is it me or is he just? I think if they can just be moderately successful, people are really going to like him. He's got like strong sitcom dad vibes.
Yeah.
He's hilarious on the mic.
He's got strong sitcom dad vibes, right?
But like he's also got like a little bit of crazy uncle vibes too. Like, I don't know if I would fuck with that guy. It's kind of big and kind of looks like he might fuck you up.
Yeah.
Reminds me of myself.
Wow. Interesting.
Uncle Eric.
Hey, that's what they call me.
Continue. Hold on. I just got to do something real quick while you're continuing.
Sally, what'd you eat for brunch today?
Brunch?
I meant lunch and breakfast, but I said together.
There we go.
I did have brunch today. I had a good old fashioned boar's head turkey sandwich.
From? Home or from Publix?
Home sandwich, baby.
Nice.
Home sandwich.
Sorry, I just had to change Dilla's name, his display name, so we're good now. all right, what else? We've gone through a lot.
So we've got another thing from the press conference was a confirmed put in a position for EVP and also wants to add assistant GM, possibly other front office type of positions. What you got on that, Uncle Eric?
From everything I've heard,
Frank Frangie says that Spielman is going to come work for Balky.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't say for sure what his role is going to be. I assume it's EVP, but this sounds like they're just doing following the rules,
mm-hmm.
which is probably an issue in itself that we knew was Spielman
probably
forever ago. Yeah. But and then the assistant GM, I haven't heard anyone specific. I've heard names or other like front office names that aren't Spielman, which is like Omar Khan. I had tweeted, who's a dude out of Pittsburgh, but he's more of like a money guy. So I don't see him as like EVP or.
So does he like to spend money?
I don't. Pittsburgh, they draft well and have a good coach, so probably not. I don't know.
But isn't he more of like a cap numbers guy? Like that.
That's what I'm saying. He's a money guy, business guy. So I don't see it. That making sense.
Maybe Balky's bad at math. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to sign big contracts.
Well, yeah, maybe in the assistant GM role, but when it comes to roster, say anyone that's just a business guy doesn't make sense.
No, and that's what, so I was thinking, that's where I was kind of going with that is it would he be someone they're targeting for that kind of assistant role to handle more of the business number side of it?
That makes sense, but I feel like he would have to be the assistant GM and something, because I think he's the assistant GM in Pittsburgh. So why would he?
Well, because Kevin Colbert's gone in 3 months.
Well, right. I understand that, but like they don't have to allow him to interview with us if they want to keep him for a year.
Well, it's not a promotion. But it's just a name that's being floated. So the type of dude they're looking for.
I think the other guy's name is like Joe Horitz. Baltimore. Yeah, I couldn't tell you shit about him. Someone said he's like really respected and that would be a great hire, but I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, it's in Baltimore. That's
Baltimore's a good place to come from.
Let's do it. All right. One of the problems with not recording for so long is that I feel like there's so much shit that's happened to possibly talk about, and it's like then we get here and I'm like, man, did we cover it all? But
I think we did.
Yeah. Overall. Dilla, anything else? Tidbits that you want to drop on people? Things that you want to clarify? Shade that you want to throw at Gene?
No, I don't think so. I think we touched on it all.
That's it, huh? We got a coach.
Got a good coach. I'm excited.
damn Jaguars. Just when you
fucking
think
hate them, suck me back in. This 2 days after I was saying I'm never going to a game again, fucking talking about the Super Bowl.
Dude, I love this shit. I don't give a damn about the Super Bowl. If it ever happens, fantastic. I just want to be able to go to Houston and not get fucking boat raced. Like, that's it. Like, give me a couple of away games a year where we're competitive and, you know, where we're flirting with 500 for a year or two. And you can go in the pride of the Jaguars as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, but anyway. That was one last thing. I thought it was hella cool to see a lot of the former players come out and be vocal.
Good point.
You know, and I know you went on Uche's podcast and chopped it up with him, but you guys know I'm big on that, both from the element of I think the organization should do more. I think that's an important part of culture. I think that's how you can build culture. I think when players who currently play for the team see the way that former players are treated, that's a really big impression on things. So when you're not taking care of that element of it, I think it's an element that's sorely missed. And I've been critical of that for some time. But also, let's face it, over the last 15 years, aside from 2007, which was 15 years ago, in 2017, there wasn't a lot for players to be proud of when it comes to their time here. So to see so many guys, you know, some that were super notable and others that were guys that had decent little careers playing for the team, but it kind of ran the gamut.
Some that were even head coaching candidates for the fucking team.
Yeah. I mean, it ran the gamut. You know what I mean? Yeah. So for a franchise that's been so maligned and that hasn't taken great players or care of former players or current players. And sometimes for one that we think like, man, do any of these guys even care about the team now that they're not playing anymore? To see them come out and to be, because it wasn't just like, man, look at these clowns, right? It wasn't like a bunch of, well, you got to look at this. It was legit like anger. Like, you guys are tarnishing something that should be important to me. Get your shit together.
People, you know, obviously Jimmy Smith is Jimmy Smith, and there's a lot of, you know, things you could say about Jimmy Smith, but Jimmy Smith rides or dies, man. Jimmy Smith is all in.
Okay.
I'm just saying he's the type of guy.
You can have that take by yourself.
Yeah. I was going to say you're not, Dilla and I are not on that hill with you.
You don't think that Jimmy Smith is all in?
Yeah, I think that.
That's all I'm saying.
Rich Basilica,
or Jimmy Smith,
fucking Rick Pistachio. I love Jimmy, and I'll leave it at that. I wasn't alluding to Jimmy Smith with my commentary preceding yours. I was
not as funny on Uche's pod. We talked about that and how they treat ex players. And his co-host on the podcast is, can't remember his name. He played O-line for the Falcons for like 7 or 8 years. He was like a top 40 pick in the draft, had a like solid NFL career. And he was like, what? Like Uche kept saying stuff like that, like the Jaguars would do to him. And the dude that played for the Falcons was legit like, you fucking kidding me? Like, no wonder you never go. And I was like, it's all I need to hear. Like, right there, one dude who played for the Falcons, one dude who played for the Jaguars, completely different like post career relationships with their team.
Mm-hmm. That kind of shit matters, man. I mean, it's awfully hard to talk about any kind of culture. Culture has to be nurtured, it has to be fostered, and it can't end the moment that you stop lacing them up, right? Because that's not the current NFL. Players are sensitive, right? They have, for better or worse, they've come up in environments where everything is, you know, Clemson's got a damn slide in their gym facility, right? Like, I mean, everything has been thought of, how do we cater to these individuals? And to get to the NFL, if you don't want it to be so transactional, which is, it's very difficult to build a cohesive culture in any environment if everyone is only looking at each other like in a transactional manner. It's really, really hard to do. So, here's hoping they get it right on both sides of it. But I found that interesting. So I didn't want to kind of finish up here without touching on it. But, you know, to see MJD calling Shad or trying to reach out to Shad, and to see some of the guys publicly, especially guys that we don't hear from so much. You guys know how I feel about the guy behind me right here, just because he's an actual fan and he rides and dies with it. Sorry, Sally, I didn't mean to shit all over Jimmy Smith on you, but
Jimmy Smith is a bigger Jaguar fan than all these other fucking ex-players. So
Jimmy Smith is, yes.
I don't even know what day it is.
Yeah. Jimmy Smith's a very big Jimmy Smith fan. I think anybody that
they all tweets are, dude.
I know, but dude, it's just, I don't need him to retweet every single person who's in his mentions slobbering all over him. Like, I don't need that on my timeline. I really don't. But I love Jimmy, and I hope he stays thriving and doing well. I also don't want Jimmy as the wide receivers coach. I also
nobody said that, my guy.
So many people on Twitter on, and all these places, Facebook, they are all saying it. While we are on the damn subject, want to make it known that I love
that's the one that said it. It came out of his mouth.
I love Keenan McCardell. I just want to go on record to let all the Jaguar fans out there know that there are other wide receivers coaches that exist in the universe other than Keenan McCardell. I just want to put out there. Yeah, other than Lonje Saul and Keenan McCardell, there are other wide receiver coaches out there, because I've already seen about 50 people on my timeline talking about, oh, they should just bring Keenan back. That would be a home run for Doug. He should bring Keenan back. And I think Keenan's a pretty good offense I think he's a pretty good wide receivers coach, but there are other people, folks, right? There are other people. So, and maybe
he's the only one I've ever heard of. What are you talking about? Yeah. It's either him or Jimmy Smith.
Lonje Saul or Jimmy? Lonje and Jimmy?
No, Keenan or Jimmy. That's your pick. That's who you got.
Well, you can't forget Jerry Sullivan, the legend who taught.
He's retired. He's retired.
Larry Fitzgerald, everything he knew.
Bro, that they hyped him up. That dude sucked. I never understood the hype.
Gus Bradley killed his spirits.
Jerry Sullivan came in at a fresh, ripe 89 years old.
I have a theory about wide receivers that we can talk about fully in another day, but I think it's one of those positions where the really, like, the difference between the DJ Charks and the Davante Adams of the world, or whatever, however you want to kind of make that distinction, is like, Cooper Kupp is a really good wide receiver. He's a phenomenal athlete. But what makes him the best wide receiver, you know, just had one of the best years that a wide receiver's ever had in the history of the league, is how obsessive he is on his craft, on the game, on understanding the game. And so to me, that's something that a wide receiver's, a position coach can't give you. And I think that's part, like, if you're not out, like Davante Adams talks about it all the time, you go do all these funny looking workouts, bro. I'm running routes, right? Like, that's what I'm doing. And if you're not obsessive about your craft, you're probably not going to be very good in the NFL. And that's not to say that these guys are, you know, are lazy bums, but like, sometimes that is the difference when everybody is a crazy athlete. And so I don't know. I think Jerry Sullivan got a ton of credit because he had a guy in Larry Fitzgerald who was obsessive and who rode for him and vouched for him. And then you got guys like Lonje Saul who can coach five guys who are fantastic wide receivers and none of them get 1,000 yards on the season. So, you know, That's the kind of shit we're coming from. But yeah, Dilla, let us know what you hear about DJ Chark. Big buzz out there in the universe. He deleted everything from his Instagram that was Jags related.
Womp womp womp. Gives a fuck. He stinks.
All right, good stuff. All right, well, I think that's all we got.
Love you, JB.
No Jag bag this time.
Love you, JB.
Maybe next time. JB, who do you love?
I love you.
Who do you love?
JB, I love you.
Can you say JB, Uncle Eric loves you?
JB, Uncle Eric loves you.
Love it.
Uncle Ewick.
Uncle Ewick. Love you, JB.
W-I-C.
Love you, JB.
Love you, JB.
God, don't do that. Don't get close to your mic.
I'm going to treat you guys to some ice cream.
Oh, I fucking left that shit sitting behind me the whole time. I'm a dumbass.
See, y'all were making fun of me for getting up. I put my shit in the freezer.
That's what I did too when I got up. All right.